Okay, I'd like to call to order the 2016 annual meeting of South Beach Road Association. If you haven't signed the sign-up sheet, it's up front here. I would like to start out, first of all, with an introduction of our board members, but before doing that, I want to recognize that this past spring, Ken Graham stepped down from the board after 7.5 years of service, three of those serving as president, and Ken has really set the standard for the upkeep of the road in terms of keeping the sides mowed, gravel, improving the signage. So I'd like everyone to give Ken a hand for the work that he's done. Okay, and with the vacancy created with Ken stepping down, the board appointed to fill out the year remaining in Ken's term, Russ Ouellette. He is a resident of 49750 Nesco Drive, and Russ brings a unique perspective to the board of being a former bridge contractor, which is something sorely needed at this point. So with that, let's have the board introduce themselves. I'm Bill Bush.
Tom Zellman.
Mike Herbel.
Russell Lett.
Gail Moore. Karen Neenkamp.
And Terry Berntessen is supposed to show up, maybe show up a little later. And guests today, we have Jack Bertel from the Proposal Rock Homeowners Association. Are there any other guests in the crowd? Okay, I should make a note that we are recording the meeting today. So if you have any comments to make during the meeting, please speak up. Please identify yourself so those who listen to the recording afterwards know who it is making the comments. And so with that, the first item on the agenda is the minutes. A copy of the minutes from last year's meeting have been circulated. Are there any comments about that? Yes?
Stephen Beckham, I would like to amend the section on creation of special road districts. The statement was made at last year's annual meeting that there were no legal ramifications to creation of a special road district. And I observed that the issue of the ownership of the private road was ambiguous and needed to be clarified, and that had bearing on creation of a special road district. The Secretary did not record that in the minutes.
Are there comments from any of the others who are at the meeting?
Well, I was sitting about 5 or 6 feet away. I didn't hear any negative comments.
Mr. Zeller, my comment was not negative. It was that we were having feelings about the ownership of the private road and whether or not a private road district, a private road, could be converted into a special road district under Oregon law. So there are legal issues, and that's what I addressed at the meeting.
That, and I don't remember everything verbatim. I remember you saying that we should consult a lawyer, and that is something that we've done. And as far as your other comments, I think those sound reasonable. We can amend the record. We'll pull it off the recording and amend the minutes, and then post the changes on the website. Any other comments about the minutes? Is there a motion to approve the minutes? Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. The next item on the agenda is the financial report. You have a copy of that. And before we look at it, I just wanted to run through some of the things that the board has been doing over the past year. One of the things that we'll talk about later is that the board has been studying this issue of special road districts. A second item is that at about this time last year, at the time of the annual meeting, we completed all the permitting steps necessary to repair the bridge. That was a step that involved getting permits from the Corps of Engineers, the Department of State Lands, the National Fish and Wildlife Service, and the last one that was the sticking point was getting the development permit from the county, which was held up by the reluctance of the bridge owner and ultimately the RV park owner to sign off on the permit. But that was done. We're at the stage now of hiring a contractor to do the work. Later in the year, or early in the year, last October, we did a major effort to try to fill potholes on the roads. Quite a bit of gravel was added. I'm not sure that that was successful, and this coming year, I think we might try something different to fight the potholes. Instead of just adding gravel, maybe come through and try to grade the roads. During the winter, we widened the corner at Knoll Terrace and Nescove Drive at the top of the hill. Previously, there was rather large island at that corner, and the corner was fairly sharp that made it difficult to turn. Because of the size of the island, it made it difficult for vehicles to get into the house at the top there. They had an ambulance that was stuck in the driveway for 45 minutes. Bill Hyatt agreed to narrow his island and broaden the curve, so that made that intersection more accessible. And following that, something that we briefly discussed at the last annual meeting was we paved Nescove Drive. The primary reason for doing that is that the slope on that hill is so steep that the gravel does not stay on it. It slides off. And as the gravel slides off, ruts develop. And ultimately, in a situation like that, it becomes more expensive to maintain a gravel road than to pave it and maintain the paved road after that. As a part of that arrangement to widen the intersection of Knoll Terrace and Nescove Drive, Mr. Hyatt agreed to change the easements for those roads that he owns up there to allow traffic from the public on the roads so that they can use Nescove Drive and Knoll Terrace. And as a part of that arrangement, we agreed that we would mow the road edges and maintain the road, Knoll Terrace, which is a paved road and in pretty good condition. The work that we're currently in the middle of is negotiating with contractors for the bridge repair. We'll speak about that a little later. And we are also in the process of trying to figure out what to do with the culvert that is just south of the intersection of South Beach Road and Knoll Terrace. So if you look at the financial report, on the first page we have a listing of the expenditures and income for the past fiscal year and the same for the previous fiscal year. We have decided this year to change, and instead of putting out a report that reflects conditions a few weeks before the annual meeting, we're going to try to standardize things and issue reports that are based on the fiscal year, and we will probably also include a mid-year summary as well, something posted on the website. As far as budgeting goes, it is usually easiest to prepare things based on conditions in the middle of the year, because by the winter most of our expenses have declined and most people have paid up, and so we know what we face. But anyway, looking at the report as it is there, the major expenditures during the past year were, first of all, the paving of Neskoke Drive, which I mentioned briefly, and then road maintenance that was largely the pothole gravel fixing exercise last October, and then beyond that is just more of the routine maintenance, and including some of the other things, some of the work, say, installing the signs. The expenditure for roadside mowing looks relatively high this year compared to last year, but that most likely is a function of we try to do three cleanups throughout the year. The middle one is about the end of June or the start of July, and what we're looking at here is just the fact that we had two of the mid-year ones end up in the same fiscal year. So typically, the roadside mowing is going to be somewhere around $5,000 to $6,000 a year. One of the changes that we did this year is that instead of mowing the area from Highway 101 to, or from the bridge to Proposal Rock Loop, instead of cutting that as a part of this three-time cycle for summer, they are mowing it with a regular lawn mower every other week. And we were told by our maintenance crew that it was actually cheaper to do it that way because it was easier if you kept it short just to routinely mow it every other week. And I think that has made it look fairly nice down there. So, are there any questions about any items on the financial report? Yes.
How much is the total amount of dues that are not paid?
That's going to be, we'll get to that next.
Okay.
Any other questions about what is on the front page? Okay. So the next part of the financial report sort of leads into the first two items under old business, and we can sort of talk about them together. I should mention, as of yesterday, and taking into account the invoices sitting on our desks, the current balance is $59,129.15. Okay, the next item, looking at things under old business, is the status of bridge repair, and I want to mention that in conjunction. Yes.
I would like to have it on that recorder that no one objected, no one suggested changes, no one questioned the financial report.
Okay. Do we want to have a motion to accept the financial report?
Second?
Second. All in?
I'd like to know if balance means bank balance.
Yes, that is the cash balance in the bank.
And are we only approving the first page or the second page?
First page.
That's also part of the financial report.
We are only approving the first page. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. So, as I said, what is on the second page is tied to the first two items in old business, the first of those being the status of the bridge repair. Last summer, before we had the final county approval, we solicited bids for the work from two local contractors, Salmon River Contractors and Dan Kaufman Excavating. Dan Kaufman chose not to bid on the project. Salmon River Construction submitted a bid of $48,660, roughly $49,000. The work could not be completed last year because by the time all the permits were issued, we were running out of time for the in-water work period, which ends September 15th. This past May, mid-May, I spoke with people at Salmon River Contractors and asked if they would like to rebid the project or would they work under the bid that they submitted last year. And they said that the quote that they gave us last year reflected what they thought they could do the job in or for. The start of the in-water work period is July 1st. I met with Salmon River in the last week of June along with the fish salvage person, and we went over the plans. And following week, Salmon River said that they would have to rebid the project. When I gave them the original bid materials, what I gave them was the drawings that we had, and also the detailed project description that was contained in the joint permit application to the Corps and to the Department of State Lands. In the first week of July, they came back and said that it would cost more, and they were submitting a bid of $110,000. So we decided that that wouldn't work, basically. And with Russ's help and some help from the design engineers, we got the names of additional contractors. Currently, the project is out on bid and being considered by five different contractors. One of them submitted a bid early. He said that he possibly could get the work done this year, but we decided to hold off and wait until we heard from all the contractors and just plan on doing the work next year. The one bid that was submitted was for roughly $92,000, and our hope is, what our indication is, that for work to be done next year, we may end up with a bid less than that amount. So maybe even as low as $80,000, somewhere in that range. Definitely more than what we were initially quoted, but significantly less than that second number of $110,000. So on the second page, what I've included is just some of the considerations for next year's budget. And on that, the if you just want to run through that first box up there, starting out with a rough balance of $59,000. Over the past 5 years, looking at the expenses from now until the start of the billing period, that is average $10,000. The information that we presented at the special meeting last March indicated that over the previous 5 years, our average annual expenses had been approximately $23,500. And if we use the one bit that we have right now for the $92,000 for bridge repair, our half of that that's being shared with the Proposal Rock Homeowners Association, our half of that would be $46,000. So just using those numbers with our current cash balance, that would leave us with a deficit of around $20,500. So that is the number that we need to make up through next year's assessment collection, and also to have some sort of cushion for unexpected expenses. And that is in the next section there for projected income. And what I've shown is the amount of money that we would expect to collect and the effect of that on the projected balance for two different scenarios. The scenario if we had 100% compliance, all of the members of the road association would pay in. And the second is based on the same people paying next year as what paid this year. And it is also based on assessments of $500 for developed lots and $200 for undeveloped lots. So we would be returning to the rate that was used in 2011 through 2013. One of the things that over the last 10 years the board has tried to target is to maintain a reserve fund of about $30,000. And that final box there is what the assessments would have to be using the number of people who have paid in the past year to reach a $30,000 balance. So you'd be developed lots, $750, and undeveloped lots around $300. And we're not saying that we want to do that, but that's just to give you an idea of how much money is raised by assessments and where things stand in terms of the overall budget. I want to emphasize that that upper block is just a approximate estimate of where things are going to be. What we will do December or January probably is look at the budget in more detail and try to come up with more accurate representations of what expenditures will be by April 1st and also the anticipated expenditures for the next year. And we will also, by that time, hopefully have bids from all five of these contractors and come up with a real number for that part. And what we will do, what we're doing as maybe a change in the way of presenting our financial information, is that at the time we send out the assessment notice, we are also going to send out a budget for the coming year so you know exactly what it is that you're contributing to. Okay, so that brings us to the current assessment collection. And for the current year, the assessed rate was $375 for developed lots, $150 for undeveloped lots. And we have the numbers that are shown there are what was paid and what was not paid. We had a very good year, the highest in the last 6 years, with 90% of the people paying their assessments. If you look at the numbers in parentheses, right, indicate the number of lots, the number of developed lots, and the number of undeveloped lots. For those assessments not paid, there were 15 lots not paid, and that is spread among 13 different owners. So are there any questions about the assessment collection? Yes. Thank you. What we were operating from was an initial scope of work provided by the engineering firm that was provided to us before they did the permitting step. So it was their proposal to us for what their charges would be for obtaining permits, and in that they included an estimate for what they thought at that time, before they had drawn up the plans, what they thought the construction expense would be. And their estimate for the construction expense was $45,000 to $50,000. So when we received that initial bid from Salmon River, we thought that it fit within the budget that they had put in their initial scope of work. But since then, speaking with them, what we've learned, or what they told me, is that that was a very rough estimate in the beginning, that the actual cost is something that you can only estimate once you have the detailed plans, and they said that if we had wanted a detailed cost estimate, they would have provided it for additional charge. So that is one of the reasons that when we looked at the initial bid from Salmon River, we thought it was in line with what we'd expect. But now looking at it more closely, it is going to cost more.
And is there a firm bid date for the other 5 firms?
The other 5 firms have, 4 of them have had it for a little over 3 weeks, and they are sort of in the peak of their construction season, and we will try to get things settled before the end of September. Yes, and please identify yourself.
My name is David Zaris, owner at 49995 Sand Road. So has the board come up with an assessment? You have 3 different options here.
No, we don't. Yeah. What we have are actually 2 rough estimates of what assessments might be. And we won't know what the actual value will be until we come up with a more detailed estimate of budget, which we'll do in January. And at that time, we will estimate what it will take for an income to meet the expected expenses for the coming year. But these are just listed to give you a ballpark idea of what we're talking about.
I have a fair amount of experience with civil improvements, and the engineer budgets are always low. They typically do that because they're providing the number to the jurisdiction, usually for a bond. And if you pay for a higher bond, it costs you more. So they try to keep that low, the figure low, to benefit you or the contractor who's providing the bond in the end. So, yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Yes?
Oh, I'm Alan Anderson. I'm back to my original question. What's the total amount of dues that have not been paid by the property owners? And
over,
what are we doing to try and collect those?
Okay. I don't have that number with me. All that I have are the numbers for this past year, and I can't have that number produced, but as far as collection, we have a problem that we've faced that we haven't figured out what to do with, and that is that we have one property owner who owns 13 vacant lots who has refused to cooperate with the billing structure as it was in the past. And just a brief mention about what that is. In 2007, just let me double check. In 2006, the association changed its billing procedure so that all vacant lots would be billed. And prior to that, they weren't. They were paid one fee for all their undeveloped lots, or at one point they paid up to the rate of developed lots for all their undeveloped lots. Starting in 2006, all undeveloped lots were billed, and one property owner refused to go along with that, only paying for one vacant lot. By the time I started on board in 2012, the balance that he owed was $11,575. Currently, the amount that he owes is over $15,000. And that number is important because that puts it above what you can recover in small claims court. You would have to go to a civil court. And the feeling of the board is that we might not be successful in a civil action. The statute covering maintenance of easements specifies that we can recover legal fees, but if you look at the basis for collecting assessments on easements like that, it is based on the extent to which you use the road. And it is our feeling that in a legal action that the person with the vacant lots with that amount of money could be successful in arguing that I don't, under those guidelines, have a responsibility for paying. Basically, the way we've operated is that we bill people for the vacant lots under the assumption that the existence of the road provides value to them, and we do expend money on vacant lots through keeping the road maintained up to that point and mowing the sides of the lawn. So we're kind of stuck in that regard. What the board decided to do in 2015 was to go more or less back to the way things were before 2006, in that people who own more than one vacant lot were just billed for one of those vacant lots. And so we currently have something like, we have 36 vacant lots that are not being assessed, and that is spread among 12 different property owners. And we made that change because it was hard for us to justify billing these people for multiple vacant lots when we have one person out there who is not going to do that. Yes. Excuse me. Can I?
So I was going to ask Bill three questions. Are any of the person's lots being sold or marketed? So the person who has 13.
Yes, all of those lots are for sale right now.
All of them are for sale, and so his access code is still working on the deed? Or no?
He does pay for his house, and he pays for one vacant lot, and because of that, we don't feel that we can deny him access to his property.
Okay. Are there any teeth in the bylaws for collection?
No, there are not. It is strictly following the guidelines of the Oregon statute associated with responsibilities of easement holders.
I would like to point out to the board that you can sue in small claims court for each year separately, but you do not need the lump sum totally.
That is something that we can consider. The other question is the time and expense involved with that. The small claims action would require board members to go up for each action, but we'll discuss that. Maybe that is something to consider.
Thank you. My name again is David.
Thank you.
Jennifer Jacoby, property owner. I had that question about the sale of lots, but I have an additional question. Once they're sold and construction begins and the use of the road is very active and aggressive for that construction, is there any change?
Once they are sold, they...
Please repeat the question.
Okay. The question was that, is there any change once the lots are sold?
Yes, and the use of the road for construction becomes necessary.
Right. And the second part of that was, once the lots are sold and the use of the road for construction becomes necessary, is there a change? Once they are sold and there's a new owner, that new owner is billed. As far as the construction question, what the board several years ago decided was that once a building permit is issued and once active construction has started, that those lots would then be billed at the developed lot rate, because that construction period involves a significant amount of traffic on the road.
I would just point out one more thing. Maybe Mr. Beckham can help me with the legal thought, but I know that there is a way that you can sue for benefit. So, and it sounded from what you said that you had already explored that, but if he's marketing it, I think that's all that you need to point out to the judge, and it would be pretty clear that he's benefiting.
We will take note of that and consider that for how to proceed with those lots and the other lots that are in arrears. Are there any other questions about the assessment collection? Okay.
Did you want to move to the second page?
Mostly just information. That's okay. Okay, the next item on the agenda is the proposed special road district for assessment collection. And what I'd like to do is, first of all, just to start with how this came about. About 4 years ago, the board asked for a legal opinion on means of improving assessment collection with the specific question of could we form a homeowners association such as the Proposal Rock Homeowners Association, which would provide more teeth in terms of collecting assessments. And the opinion that we received was that we could only do that if there was a 100% sign-off of all property owners stating that they wanted to be a part of a homeowners association. And we, the board at that time, pretty much decided that that would be unlikely. If people are refusing to pay assessments, there's not an indication that they are going to sign on to a situation that would require them to pay. The lawyer at that time suggested that we look into special road districts, and that is how we came into looking into special road districts. There was a special meeting last March where the special road district issue was discussed. There is a PowerPoint presentation that went along with that meeting. If you have any questions about how it would be implemented and some of the background material, take a look at that PowerPoint presentation. There is also an audio file that goes along with that. Following the special meeting last March, the board decided that there were a number of questions that persisted. There were also some new questions that were raised at the special meeting, and we decided that it was time for legal advice. We were given the name of an attorney who specializes in local and municipal law, somebody whose specialty is creating special districts. Her name was provided by the Special District Association of Oregon. And so we asked her a series of questions, received an opinion, and then following the opinion, went through several different stages of follow-up questions. And what I want to do now is just go over some of the material that we learned from her. What we will do is to post all of the exchanges and the legal opinion on the website for people to look at. We wanted to wait until the meeting now so that we could give you some introduction that might provide insight into some of the things that are mentioned in the opinion and the comments. So, in the initial contact with the attorney, the primary question, something that has been a primary issue from the beginning, is whether the access gate could be retained at the entrance to South Beach Road. This is an issue that, from the very beginning, the board said that we would not do anything that would involve removing the gate. So that was one of the questions. A second question that came up during the special meeting was the ability of outsiders to demand entrance into the special district as a result of it being a public entity. So, just to go through some of the comments of that we received from the attorney. The first thing is that under a special district, the roads that are designated to be maintained by the special district would become local access roads. And in that category, they would be public roads. But before you get all excited about that, by public, what we mean is that the public here would be the membership of the special district. The road district would own the roads, but there, with the exchange that subsequently followed with the attorney, it depends on how you define own. And by own, what is meant is that the road district would own the easements to the road, and through that, the road district would control jurisdiction over the road. It would replace the current situation of a patchwork of easements that we currently have, where we all own easements that basically give us the right to use the road from our doorstep to Highway 101. And so with that public aspect of the road district creation, what that would mean is that members of the road district, the road association, would have the right to use all the roads within the boundaries of the road district. Under our current arrangement, there's no reason for anybody except the property owners and residents up on the hill to drive up there, but we see a steady stream of traffic. We basically operate under the system where we assume that all the roads are common, and with the road association, we are paying as if it is a common resource. I mean, we're doing the maintenance on all the roads. So that is one of the things. The easements would change so that everybody had legal access to all of the roads. Just as an aside, starting in 1995, Bob Foltz offered to transfer ownership of South Beach Road and the other roads that he owns to the Road Association. And that offer came with the condition that all other people who owned portions of the road would transfer their ownership to the Road Association. And also the Road Association would have to pay for a survey to verify the location of the roads. That issue apparently stagnated until around 2007 when Wendy Cayley was president, and then it restarted. There are a series of correspondence between Wendy and Bob Foltz asking about how this would be accomplished, and it seems to have stalled out there, partly under, I think, the issue of who would pay for surveying the roads. But one of the things that is mentioned in those correspondences is the desire of the board at that time to clean up the easements so that there would be the common easement that road association members would be entitled to access all parts of the roads that are maintained by the association. Okay, one other comment about something that I mentioned earlier, controlling the jurisdiction. Under the road district would have control over who could access the road. And here the thing that specifically comes up are those patrons of the RV park. Currently, the situation is that the ability of the RV park patrons to access the road is controlled by Bob Foltz, in that he owns the road and that portion that runs along the RV park. And if you look at the correspondence, there's some indication that granting an easement to them has been something that he considered in the past. Currently, he is strongly opposed to granting an easement to the RV park patrons, but that is an unknown that potentially could change in the future, that if he were offered certain concessions, money, or whatever, he might change his mind. Or if Mr. Foltz is upset with the road association, he might change his mind. Yes?
Is that portion of the road is to Romaine, or is to Granton?
Yes, he owns that portion of the road. We all have easements to use that road, but he owns the land that underlies the road. The road association does not own anything. Starting at the intersection of Nest Cove and South Beach Road, the road is jointly owned by the Foltz family and Bill Hyatt. And then starting at the curve near, I think, the Monroe's house, it then breaks down to each of the homes and cottages along Nest Cove Drive for that stretch own the road immediately in front of them.
So if he gave access to the RV park, there wouldn't be any way we could keep people off of it.
Right.
Right.
I believe it would be the gate at Nesco Drive and Nesco Court and take over the access there. And the reason to do so is there's no parking place, there are no restrooms, and consequently the inflow of the public to the beach area has dramatic impact on those of us who have oceanfront properties.
Right. We all fully understand that. If situations were different in the beginning, if they had set up something maybe like what is down on Salishan, where there's a walkway around the properties, there's parking, it might be different, but our current infrastructure wouldn't support that. And beyond that, it then becomes a question, if all these people are coming in, they should contribute to the maintenance of the road. And that has been something that comes up. As far as accessing the beach, Mr. Foltz does own the road that heads north toward Proposal Rock, and there is a beach access at the end of that. So there would be, I suppose, a legal way for people to get to the beach. But, I mean, that's just the way that things are. Under the special road district, the road district would control the jurisdiction. So if we wanted to exclude the RV park people, we could do so, as long as all the patrons of the RV park people were not part of a protected group. So if it turned out that everyone in the RV park was female, then we probably would have to let them in, but otherwise, no. Yes?
Is Mr. Foltz's signature necessary to create the district?
No.
Since he is the owner.
Question?
Yes.
Comment? It seems to me that there would have to be 100% agreement of all the easement owners in order for this to proceed, and that would include Mr. Foltz as well as those of us who own the sections of road that are in front of our homes. And secondly, and I think this is a critical point, what was the opinion of the attorney on the reality that all 82 special road districts in Oregon are ungated public thoroughfares?
We'll get to that. And
I mean, that's the critical, the critical
right.
issue here.
Okay. As in regard to your first comment, it actually isn't necessary for the current owners of the property who have granted easements to sign off on it. That is my understanding. That is something that...
Sounds like a legal opinion you're giving.
No, that is from reading the comments that have been provided to us, and that would be something, if that time ever came about, would be thoroughly studied. Okay, in regard to the gate, that was the next thing that I wanted to get to, and the gate is an issue that has regularly come up, and we acknowledge that all other special road districts in Oregon, 82 or whatever, do not have a gate. But in looking into this, our question about that is why? You just have the observation that they don't have a gate. What we wanted to find out is why, and that is one of the reasons we asked the attorney. And so what she provided in her initial opinion is that under Oregon Statute 368.056, permit for gate construction on public road, a county governing body may issue a permit to a person to allow construction of a gate or stock guard on a public road under the jurisdiction of the county governing body. The county governing body may impose any conditions or specifications on the permit it determines advisable to preserve the purposes of the public road. Conditions on a permit under this section may include a requirement that the person issued the permit shall bear all costs of construction and maintenance of the gate or stock guard. What?
The ORS number
is 368.056. And it was the opinion of the attorney then that seeing that all special road district members, all people contributing to the maintenance of that road, of the gate, would be behind the gate, that there it would be reasonable to allow a gate to be placed up there. Yes.
This is the kind of opinion that we thought that Commissioner Lauhart was going to obtain from County Legal Counsel. And within 3 days of our meeting, County Legal Counsel refused to provide such legal advice on this matter.
Right.
So we have an attorney that you've engaged who says you can put a gate there, but Tillamook County, our public lawyer for us, has refused to give an opinion on this matter.
Right, and let me address that. And it's based on previous dealings with the county commissioners, that the county legal counsel is not a free legal consultant for residents of the county. The county legal counsel exists to provide legal guidance to the commissioners and to the planning commission. And I believe what Commissioner Labhart said in response to your request is that at the time that this would come before the commissioners, the legal counsel may weigh in. But we have asked previously for the legal counsel to give us an opinion about what he thinks, and it, basically the response is that that is not his function.
But our concern is that the county would take over the appointment of the road commission, and the county will now be collecting the ad valorem taxes through county offices. So the county, it would be heavily vested in this situation, and yet we can't get a legal opinion from the county council as to whether or not there can be a gate. That seems to me a very dangerous step to take.
And that would be a step to take only after communicating directly with the county commissioners to see if they would approve permitting a gate, which apparently by Oregon statute is allowed, and they would have to issue a permit. We'd have to find out what that would be. And we would basically, what we're going to propose to do is to sit down with the commissioners and to see what their response to all of these items that have been raised by our attorney would be. And at that time, we may not receive a direct opinion from the legal counsel, but the information would be transmitted to him and probably provide guidance in terms of what the county commissioners told us. Tom.
My name is Tom Pilatich. You're a nonprofit and working with for 15 years without helping there. And I've always made our assessment. I just wanted to make a comment that it's not odd. I'm an attorney, although not an Oregon attorney, although I'm hopefully one fairly soon. It's not odd for the lawyer for the county, or for the county commission, to not give an advisory opinion to anybody who lives within this jurisdiction. There's a general prohibition in American law, in Oregon, no different. Once there is a matter that is formally before the commission, then the attorney for the commissioners or the county will give advice to the commission or the county as they see fit. But to get an advisory opinion in advance of that would be very irregular.
And one other comment sort of related to that. This is not related to anything with South Beach Road Association business, but at another planning level meeting with the county commissioners, Commissioner Labhart made the comment that the county legal counsel doesn't know very much about special districts. So if he's going to make an opinion, come up with an opinion or judgment on special districts, he would have to seek out advice and probably look at things like the comment that we've obtained. So that is probably why he wouldn't or couldn't come up with an immediate response to your request.
Well, within the 3 days between our meeting on Saturday and his letter on Monday, he had more than 48 hours to do research, or he could have taken 3 weeks to do the research, but he didn't do it.
Right.
Okay, that's just an observation.
Well, Commissioner Labhart may have overcommitted him with that statement. Okay, just a couple of other things that I want to comment on. Is that related to comments under the power of the county in a special road district? And so one of them, under Oregon Statute 368.016, the county could make the road district roads county roads. And in the course of doing this, they would take over maintenance of roads, basically. I mean, there would no longer be a purpose for us paying to maintain the roads that they became county roads. And as far as that, at the special meeting, Commissioner Labhart stated that The county will not do that. It doesn't have the money. Tillamook County, like many coastal, rural coastal counties, is cash poor, or just basically poor. We're not as bad off as counties like Curry County, but with the collapse of the timber industry, the loss of federal forest dollars, their budget over the last, just within the last 15 years, has been cut in half. So the county has no budget for bringing on additional responsibilities. Yes, Dave?
So the sole purpose of turning the roads over to the county would be that we're lacking in collection?
No. The special road district does not turn the roads over to the county. What I just described is that one of the powers of the county is that they could take over the roads, but what we have been told, and realistically what is out there, is that the county would not want to do that. Currently, the county, within Tillamook County, there are 245 local access roads, and the most recent action by the county in regard to local access roads in 2008 was to stop any funding of any sort to that they may have previously provided to local access roads. For example, one of the things that they used to do was when the county would have their bridges inspected, they would have the inspectors go around and inspect all of the bridges, including those that are on the other special district in Tillamook County, the Three Rivers Branch. They'd be included within that. 5 years ago, we paid for an inspection. It was $1,500. Apparently, in the past, the county picked that up in all similar situations, but no longer because, again, the county doesn't have money. The current situation that Tillamook County is facing is that they took ownership of this second access into Nesquen. It was deeded to them by the Walton family. The goal is to provide a second means of exiting the village during periods of high water in the winter or any other emergency. And what started out as a project that may have been projected to cost a few hundred thousand is now at $1.3 million.
Yeah.
So the county has no interest in obtaining substandard roads.
So what's the benefit? I'm trying to see if we So if we turn the roads over to or become a special road district, what's the benefit of that? Because
I'll get to that in a second, but the special road district has authority over the roads. The county does not have authority. Except the next thing is that the county does, like all matters within the county, have an overriding authority, it's a possibility. So the question that came up at the special meeting was, could the county grant access to outsiders to use the road? And under Oregon Statute 368.031, the county basically does have the power to trump access, to trump the authority of the road district, any actions of the road district. However, in talking with the 21 representatives of special road districts that I spoke with last winter, all of them said that in their districts they had never had any county interference. In our case, again, the concern people have is who would want access, and the first thing that comes up is the RV park. And realistically, looking at that, what allegiance does the county owe the RV park? All of the patrons, most likely, are from outside of Tillamook County. The owner of the RV park is a Washington resident whose only contact with the county in the last 5 years has been to ignore directives from the county to stop entering our roads via the fence. So I don't think there's any strong loyalty or willingness to accommodate the RV park in part of the county. As far as local residents or people within Tillamook County who might want to access the roads, most of those people who want to come onto our property to get to the beach currently do so either through knowing the code or knowing that to get into the gate, you just wait till somebody else goes through the gate. And I don't think, I have never heard of any big demand for open access.
I'm just hearing over and over and over and over, I mean, for at least a year, about a perceived threat from the resident, threat that we would experience or whatever, as a result of people from the RV park coming through the gate, or let's just say there is no gate. Now, if you go out and measure the gate, it's probably between 15 and 20 feet wide. 15 and 20 feet wide. And to Steve's house and, let's see, the Steiners and Ernie Ostrom and who's the other one? What's the other pioneer home down there? Distance is probably a quarter of a mile. I don't know. It could be a little less, a little more. But it's about a quarter of a mile from 101. People are worried about the people from the RV park coming through the gate or no gate, traveling a quarter of a mile to throw a McDonald's cup in their yard. I have not heard anyone express any fear that people, that is the public, who are enjoying the beaches, which are right in front of the Pioneer Homes, which are probably maybe an eighth of a mile long, maybe that property is about an eighth of a mile. You're about 100 feet from the beach. It's a public beach. Jack the Ripper, Ted Bundy, any number of people, John Hinckley, serial killers, pedophiles, rapists, plunderers, you name it. Thank you. I was trying to introduce a little humor there. But you're about 100 feet from those people. That's the public. But you're worried about somebody that's a quarter of a mile away who's going to come through a 20-foot gate. If there's some consistency of thought, I can't see it. So would someone please explain to me why you're more fearful of the people from the RV park than you are from the people who are on the public beach 100 feet from your house. Thank you.
Fisherman Road, I'm right down the corner. Our big concern is that we have an insurance policy, a homeowner's policy on the property. And to get to the beach, you have to come across our property. I trust our local residents a lot more on going on our road and crossing our property than I do beach people from the RV park crossing our property.
How do you identify
them? They lost them, and they have tripped or fallen, or they took them on our property, and not so, therefore they can find an attorney who would be more than happy to take it on and engage them. That's the biggest thing to be sure.
We have a person who just wanted to ask a question back.
I have a problem with that. I was explaining. There is a problem of yarding people that are neighbors. They can park where they really want to because there's a porta potty down there. And we have fences up with no trespassing signs. And they ignore it all. This year I've been sworn at, spat at, told like a lonely cop to be told. Rip out, and then they're going to walk all over my backyard right in front of me, no matter what. And they come in and they bring their children in. They pick their children up and down that rip rap and do any, because there are two ways to walk down the public road to go to a public access. And they climb over things to get there. And these are people I only see them once or twice. And that means they're RV people, but they're just there for a while. They don't care about this property. We care about the property because it's here. Because we own it, we care for it, and we care what happens to it. It's very hard to maintain the backyard on the end with all the stress. And our backyard is small. Somebody walks into my yard, they look right in and whatever they're doing in the house. My dog is out there. They could kill my dog. I wouldn't know. This is what's the matter with our people in the somebody else in the room. It's very frightening sometimes to have a place yourself under your yard, except your father.
Okay, Steve?
Well, furthermore, approximately 5 summers ago, when the RV park categorically refused to tell their patrons that they could not trespass in South Beach, we have a constant flow of people, and they would go into the woods and drag limbs and stumps and firewood down the road to build fires on the beach, which they have a right to do, but they were harvesting it off of Mr. Pulse's property, dragging it through our front yard, and then throwing your beer bottles onto our lawn. And because you live up on the hill, I don't think you can confront Elizabeth and Julie and some of the rest of the space down there on the beach almost on a daily basis. There is very significant trespass of people. And because there are no public parking places down there, they nudge in wherever they can find a white spot. So this really is an important issue, and it's why the gate is so important to us. That's also why I went to the county to look at the crime statistics of 174 incidents in the village since 2011, and only 7 inside the gate at South Beach. That is a real measure of how that simple 20-foot wide gate provides security, particularly for those of us who are not year-round residents. And on the flatland, there are none of us that live there year-round. We are all vacation home properties. That is really why we brought this concern to you, because the prospect of an ungated road really changes the value of our property and the security and ambiance of our neighborhood.
Tom, you have a comment?
You know, let's assume that everybody wants to keep that. The concern is that by going through the process of getting the road district, Tillamook County will somehow get it today, which I think has a probability of less than 5%, maybe 1%. The statute that you read, to us, is primarily about the construction of the gate. It does, toward the end, talk about maintenance, but it's really almost a fait accompli. You have your gate. You're not going to construct the gate. If you go through the application process, which I'm assuming you have to do with Tillamook County, and you say, we have a gate, we want to keep the gate, then that's going to be the county's time to register any objection to that, which is a practical matter I don't see happening.
I got something.
So there'd be a great advantage of the special road district is that, or something like that, is that you can make what has been voluntary involuntary. There are people who don't pay their assessments, and you can enforce the payment. If the one downside is the potential for losing the gate, I don't see that happening, but you're going to know in going through the process whether there's any probability of it happening before it's finalized.
David?
I would also suggest that, I guess I have 2 suggestions. One is that I've read through the bylaws, and it appears that only local residents are eligible for board membership. I would suggest to the board that you change the bylaws to allow people who are in
the bylaws of what? The bylaws of the current road association?
The road association bylaw?
No. Anybody can be a board member.
For
the South Beach Road Association, anybody can be a board member.
Right. He's a homeowner.
No, that, and
but we're not full time.
The situation that we oftentimes run into is trying to find volunteers who want to serve on the board, and it has worked out that currently the people who want to volunteer are full-time residents, and they probably have done so because being here full-time puts you more immediately and aware of what problems exist and what it takes to fix them. Right. Just let me.
So there was one other thing about the county and the special district. So, am I using the proper terms? Because I'm getting confused about
the thing that we are studying is the special road district.
Okay, so the special road district, if you were to pursue that, or if we were to pursue that as a group, you can make it contingent upon. What is it, the city ordinance, county law? Would it be a county law?
No, it is a state statute that governs that.
I got something I need to
say. No, but what I'm driving at is you can have the county pass an ordinance prior to us handing over that says that we will have the gate, we will keep the gate, and that they cannot change anything, like future commissioners, future head of the future head of the road maintenance crew of the county cannot decide to take out the gate.
Okay. Russ, you want to?
Yeah, I hear a lot of talk about the RV thing, and I really don't want to make a comment on that, but what I will say, I live on Nesco Drive, up towards the top where it was paved, and I'm here full time. And I don't know if they walk around on their back and says RV or on the back, and that's how you can tell who they are. But what I will tell you is there's a lot of people that rent here, and I see that a lot because I'm here all the time. So all these people that are wandering through yards and all that, I the association of everybody with that RV park is wrong, for one. And I don't know, is there some kind of culture where they're bad people? You know, some of those coaches are million-dollar coaches. So I don't think any of us want them traipsing through, but let's get one thing straight. A lot of the people that are here that we don't see very often, cars that race by all the time, they're going down to a rental house of your neighbors.
Right. Herb?
And unfortunately, if you get into it with homeowners.
Absolutely.
I mean, we're not all.
Nobody's perfect. No one here is perfect.
Except maybe you're.
Right.
I did have one question. We're all concerned about the gate. This proposal rock. Their association have anything to say about that?
Yeah.
I mean, they own it in partnership with us.
Correct.
Yeah, Bill.
Oh.
It strikes me, I'm just sitting here, I'm just sitting here listening to all of the remarks and comments, and I almost wonder if we need to kind of pull it back and you know, kind of bullet point this thing so that we can get the proper perspective. And maybe some of what Bill's been trying to explain didn't come through clearly. But, you know, the reason he spent time emphasizing, talking about the permitting of the gate is that if we go through the process of working with the county and permitting the gate, we will know, if the county issues the permit for the gate, you know, we'll know unequivocally that gate is there, it stays there, and it's been permitted by the gate, by the county. And so the idea that the gate won't be there, it goes away. You know, so one of the things I think Bill's trying to say is that's part of the process that we still need to look into is that permitting of the gate. And if they do permit it, then the gate's not going to go away, the gate's going to stay. So that the benefit of the roads of the district is, frankly, it's just a tool to get everybody to pay their fair share for the maintenance of our road system. That's all it is. So, you know, I mean, I think everybody needs to reel it in a little bit and understand we're just trying to find a tool that gets everybody to pay their fair share here for the road district.
Okay, let me.
70% participation rate, that's excellent.
It was 70%.
Oh. Well, it was lower in the past. This past year,
you guys have done a great job.
No, I mean,
but it's the way it's calculated, though.
You guys,
every vacant lot, it's not 90%.
Yeah, but I would like to compliment not the board, but you guys out there who are paying the assessments for doing so, and that helps things out. Just, there are a couple things that I want to do and maybe go a little farther on here. Some of the comments that have been made so far.
We didn't hear from Proposal Rock.
Yeah, just 1 second, but leading up to Proposal Rock. I agree that the RV park is a problem because it is a high concentration of people that are right next to us, and that increases the likelihood that they may be a contributor to traffic. I would also agree with Russ's comments that a lot of the traffic that you're seeing, people who end up inappropriately parking along the area close to the beach, could be the short-term rental people, and there are a large number of short-term rental. So you can't blame it all on the RV park, but that is a significant problem that we want to address. And it was a problem earlier in the summer, which I think the Proposal Rock people took care of. That gate had fallen down, and they made the effort to ultimately get it put up. But prior to that, there was a more steady stream of people coming through. Jack, do you want to make a comment?
Jack, I'm going to pull it up on you. There's no question that we're 100% behind the beach engineering. There's no question about that. The situation, of course, is the same concern. We get people traversing through our private property. The fortunate thing we have, as opposed to you, is that our Proposal Rock subdivision is platted and is incorporated back in 1978. So we have a lot fewer problems as far as collection. We have means for sale, and we've had very good cooperation. But as far as answering the question on a yes, never remove it, is our opinion.
Right. And would you have the, would we require your permission if we wanted to remove it?
I think so, yes.
I know. But if we're concerned about that, we have the most out of hand now.
Right. Julie?
We're no, on the gate, that's my point.
We're in a partnership process.
Right.
Construction, both of the original gate and the current gate and the ongoing gate.
So the county can't take it from us and they can't take it from you.
We have our.
The county cannot take your private gates, even if there was a
road like you're in that.
Yeah.
Okay. If you don't have anything. Julie, you had a comment?
When I was referring to the RV park, I was referring to it as an area, like a neighborhood, that is a 200 space campground. And those vehicles are not just one person, they are two, three, or four vehicles.
Well, I thought they're only
in terms of
100.
Like 200 homes, 200 families who are eager to come down our roads and cross past our yards to
right.
The beach.
It is a very high concentration population center, and that is one of the problems. Okay, if, Alan?
There would be three directors of this road, of the road district, is that correct?
Yeah, there would be three directors.
And who would get to vote on who those people are?
Can I get to that in just a second?
Yeah.
I wanted to make one more comment about the material that we received from the lawyer, and that is that I mentioned that one of the powers that the county had is that they could potentially override the actions that the road district takes. They could potentially grant access to people from the outside, and the reply from the attorney to the question, if the county wanted to declare the local access road open to anyone from outside the special road district, could they do so? And the attorney's reply was, theoretically, I would say yes, but it wouldn't be a fast or clean process in that the lawyers on either side would likely haggle about whether the statute really extends this far, and it could be sticky politically. The county would have to really capitalize, be motivated if they wanted to try. And the question is, are they really motivated?
So is that referring to like condemnation?
No, this isn't referring to condemnations. This is just the ability that the county has to have the final say over any other special district of any sort, fire department or anything else within county. David, you have...
Yes, I would just like to, I'd like to point out to everybody that I've done a lot of development and real estate, and I'm not an attorney. My mom is. But when there's a spat, we have a gate, but the county sit very easily with a bulldozer come and remove the gate in about 2 hours, and then it would be our fight to get the gate back. So that is how developers sometimes view things in terms of, I'm not saying that I would go and do that to a community.
Well, that's something that is unknown. For we need to move on to some other things, but let me just say that if you want to look at some of the details regarding the special road district issue, it is all on the website currently. We will post the opinion and the comments on the website. And what I want to just sort of end with is that in looking at the road district, the reason why we're even studying it is that it would be a means by which all members would be required to contribute to the roads. As we talked about last March, as a result of the county taking over the billing process and other things, there would be greater efficiency, reduced cost of operations. It would provide a stable, guaranteed source of funds. If we needed to ask for more money, if we wanted to reach that 30,000 limit and have 30,000 reserve and have assessments around $750, that might be a question. One of the big things that sits out there is what would happen if the bridge went out. I checked with the Director of Public Works to replace our bridge with a 70-foot span. That would probably be somewhere between $400,000 to $600,000. And we would share that equally with Proposal Rock, so Jack will just write a check for $300,000 and take care of that. But on our end, with the people who paid during this past year, that would amount to all of the developed lot property owners paying $4,500, and the people with vacant lots would have to pay $1,800. So what sort of compliance rate do you think we'd get with that if we came around and asked people, would you write a check for $4,500 so we can replace the bridge? One of the other advantages of the special districts is that there are mechanisms for obtaining money through grant programs, things that you can apply for if you have some sort of governmental connection. And so there are other ways of raising funds. In addition, just some of the things that I mentioned today, the easement issue would be standardized across the road district, and that idea that the road district would control the jurisdiction of our boundaries, control the jurisdiction of the roads. And admittedly, there are a number of potential negative things. One of the things that you mentioned is that the only people who can serve as directors are people who are registered voters within the special road district. And last fall, there were 18 registered voters. Since then, we've had 4 couples move in, so that number could be moving into the mid-20s. But it is low compared to the overall number. That is a drawback. But in the things that were outlined in that presentation last March, what we've proposed are bylaws changes that would allow non-full-time residents, non-registered voters, to contribute through a budget committee that would put together the budget, establish priorities for what needs to be spent. We would still hold an annual meeting. All property owners, full-time residents or not, could vote for these 3 directors. The directors are appointed by the county commissioners, and they just take the names put forward by them. We suggested that then under this arrangement with the current road association, everyone would have a vote. So we, in putting this together, have tried to work around that thing that is otherwise the sticking point, that only the registered voters can be the directors. The Other thing that could be a negative is that the special district is required to hold monthly meetings, and that could be a little tediousome for the directors. It also could be something where all the property owners would know when it's going to happen. They could show up and they could express their feelings about things. Also, the special district would have to follow state guidelines for purchasing and contracting, which might be a little extra paperwork, but it might help out in obtaining bids that are solid and best deal to get. So, briefly, that's sort of the positives and negatives. There's another category, and that is the unknown, and that is mostly what we've been talking about today. Looking at the opinion, there are questions raised about the extent of the county's power and also the issue about the gate, whether that is something that is absolutely possible. And so what the board is proposing at this time is that, just to reemphasize what I said in March, there's no deadline for doing this. This is would be a significant change from the way things currently operate. And there is a lot of information for people to consider. Things from the special meeting last March, some of the things that we've talked about today, the information that we're going to post on the website. The other thing that is happening is that currently there is the proposal by Mr. Fultz and his partners to develop the Cove area. And that is something that people here have had questions about, even though we've tried to emphasize that they're separate. And I think if we went to the county commissioners now, it's likely that they might be confused about it. So I think the best, and the board thinks, that the best course is to put this on hold, let the issue about the development of the Cove go through its cycle. Its final decision date by the county, all work by the county, has to be completed by January 16th of the coming year. And after that time, what we would like to do is to meet with the county commissioners and sound them out on the opinions and the comments that we have obtained and to see if any of this is feasible. Again, the concerns that you've expressed today and what have been expressed before and what go back to the beginning of our consideration, maintaining the gate and securing our boundaries, are among the things that are of primary interest. And so our proposal is basically to continue the study, see what the county commissioners say about all of this. If they say a gate is not possible, that's the end of it. And we'll report back at the annual meeting next year and update where we are. And if there's a decision to be made, we can do it then. Steve.
Thank you. That's a very interesting accommodation, and I'm glad to hear that rather than full speed ahead, that this matter is still under consideration and study. I'm very concerned, however, about the powers in the special road district that are so significantly greater than those of the South Peak Road Association. They include to acquire, hold, receive, and dispose of real property, to sue and be sued, and the fourth one, to exercise the power of eminent domain. And my particular concern on that is self-interest. Many of us live on a road that has a 20-foot wide of way. If that is to be increased to a 30-foot Oregon road standard, out goes fences, yards, septic systems, significant investment that we've made for the Monroes. There's no more room to take 10 feet out of their yard. The road didn't be 1 foot from their house. So these powers are far more sweeping and encompassing than what we've been accustomed to working under for the last 35 years. And I don't know that there's going to be a push in the near future for a 30-foot road standard, but the county, one, has the power to trump the gate and open the roads, and shouldn't do that. It's inevitable, I think, that there would be a crest to go to 30-foot roads, and that has, again, significant consequence to many property owners.
Can I comment about that? The first of that list of items that you mentioned, the power to own property, when you initially mentioned that, I can understand what you're talking about. You're concerned about the property in front of your house. When I was thinking, when I read that, thinking of property, what I was thinking of was another item that I should have mentioned under our accomplishments this year, and that was acquiring the materials to build a beaver deceiver to get rid of the beaver that was plaguing us. What we did this year was through hiring a contractor who repeatedly dug out the dam, and actually some of us got in there, or at least I got in there and shoveled out the dam. We got the beaver to move to Proposal Rock. Everything is fine in our neighborhood now. But regarding the more significant thing, the point of eminent domain, maybe I didn't make it clear enough at the meeting in March. Eminent domain would, you are not going to give your property away. Your property would be purchased. And your property looks very nice. It is worth a lot of money. The road district doesn't have the funds to purchase that property, and I don't think you can find anyone in the room would want to disadvantage you by purchasing that property. So as far as the road district exercising eminent domain, I think that that is really remote. As far as the county exercising eminent domain, within the past 2 weeks, something has come up in the Bay Ocean Spit area. Currently, Bay Ocean Spit is largely county-owned. There is still some private property, remnants of the turn of the century, turn of the 20th century, back in the early 1900s, community that was built there and washed away. There's still some private property there. The county would basically like to make the entire area a natural area, and so one of the considerations was the county acquiring that property. And so they would do so through purchase. The county held a meeting to consider this. One of the attendees of the meeting asked Commissioner Josie, who was presiding, if the county planned to employ eminent domain to take over ownership of the privately owned lots in Bay Ocean. And his response was that eminent domain is a very blunt, very effective tool, which we have never used, and I think we will never use. Tim Josie has been a commissioner for 18 years. If his knowledge of Tillamook County is that Tillamook County has never used eminent domain and is unlikely to do so, I would trust that. The work that we did with the Coastal Hazards Committee that came before the county commissioners, one of the things that we learned is that the county commissioners are very protective of private property. They are not ready to do anything that would jeopardize that. So I recognize your concern, but I think that the likelihood of eminent domain is extremely unlikely. But in the next year, to answer some of these questions, that would be something also on the table, that we would want some sort of assurance that that wouldn't happen. Can I ask?
I just have a question.
And your name, please? The board is not going to ram anything through without the consent of the people of the road association. So we would ask for your input. That being the ability to, it isn't something that is put forward by the road association, it is something that it could be put forward by any collection of people who circulate a petition and go before the commissioners. We think that it's important for everybody to have some sort of input, so that's why we're trying to work through the South Beach Road Association. Could I get the person in back who hasn't said anything?
Gene Campbell, next photograph. So you're saying that it wouldn't be the permanent residence of registered voters here that would be voting for the special district, but the entire
The steps for creating a special district is that you first have to present a petition to the commissioners, and the people who signed that commission are any property owners. They aren't just registered voters. They are registered voters and non-residents. Ultimately, creation of a district would require a vote, and that then it would require a vote at the county level. That would only be open to the registered voters.
Okay.
But that's only 19 people rather than 94 property owners.
It's probably a little higher than that.
Probably 23 people.
Right. But
that's a really significant change over the management of the properties that we purchased and owned and have maintained. We go from 94 voters to 23.
But,
22.
Excuse me, just a second. What I just said is that there's no proposal. The petition going forward would only be at the recommendation of this group here. Yes, and
My name is Pat Woodcroft. We live on South Beach, next door to Ellen. And we were property owners before there was even a homeowners association. We were a part of this whole thing getting started. And we dealt with faults. And I want to tell you that was an experience that was at one point they weren't going to let us build the rest of our house because it was going to infringe on something that he was talking about. And Alan was driving down different roads trying to keep things open. So we have come a very long way. And I want to comment and compliment the board and you for all of the work you've done. And then my question is this. I'm trying to sift through all of this, and I realize I'm over and I'm not hearing everything as well as I might. Are we saying that we're going to table this because we're kind of throwing the dice if we go with the county and we don't know what they're going to maybe investigate or maybe what they're not, and we're not sure we're better off just staying the way we are, so the whole thing boils down to let's table it?
We are saying that we don't have all of the information necessary to make a sound, educated decision. What we need is to answer these unknowns. What the county might, how the county would do this, how they might exercise the powers that they potentially have. So before we can know what we'd be voting on, we need more information. Okay.
No, I feel obliged to say, to remind everybody that the formation of the district is not a county function. That's a function that we would do. And what we're talking about is a lot of fear surrounding what might possibly happen if somebody were to go to the county and ask the county to gain access to our private road district. And so, you know, there's a lot of fear mongering or fear. There's just a lot of fear that right now is, are these possibilities out there? I suppose they are, and we should responsibly consider them. But the fact of the matter is the formation of the district is something that we as a group in this room will do, and the county has nothing to do with it. The county commissioner stood here at the last special meeting and said, go for it, form a district. We don't want anything to do with it. You guys maintain your roads however you want to. So I think everybody kind of needs to keep that perspective.
Phil?
Yes, Mark.
South Peak Road, halfway to the low rent district. There are concerns about the special road district and the county taking over the roads. They can take over it anyway. They can build it anytime they want. The gate has to be removed to allow people to get to the beach instead of crossing the stream. The state could say, we want to put an entrance in the Cascade Head up at the top, so we're taking over the road. Thank you very much. It can happen either way, but then.
Yeah,
just in theory.
Yeah. I don't know, and
yeah.
I don't want the additional work of looking into that. Right. Okay, if we could move on. If everybody is satisfied that we'll get more information, come back here same time.
I want to check out what was just said about what the board's committed to and your role, Bill. It's been very informative, and you've kept the communications very well open. I want to appreciate you.
Thank you. And could we move on then? There are several other items that I wanted to hit. And first of all, change in annual meeting records. I briefly mentioned that we are trying to do some minor adjustments with financial records so that we'll present information on a fiscal year basis, and that we'll try to give you a mid-year update and also provide that information with the assessment collection probably on the website. Maybe we'll include an updated page with the assessment letter in April. Secondly, regarding minutes during the meeting, what we want to do is follow the standard currently followed by the county, which is for commissioners' meetings, for planning commission meetings, all of that is recorded. We are recording this now. Hopefully, the previous meeting, the special meeting, turned out fairly well. Hopefully, this will work equally well. If we need to, we'll get a microphone. It is fairly easy to turn this around and have this posted on the website in about a week. We will accompany that with a summary of what was accomplished at the meeting, so basically go through the agenda with one or two sentences saying this is how those items are addressed. So that is the change that we propose. The next thing, riprap repairs. Last March 10th, there was a significant storm, something with 30-foot waves that damaged riprap along the front. And significantly, the area around the southernmost access was damaged. And just to give you an idea how unfortunate riprap damage is, the quote that we received for repairing that area along the parking area and the stairway was for $14,600, which, looking at that span between 2011 and 2015, in some years, our entire annual budget was less than that. The problem that we had with repairing that area is that, yes, there are stairs that go through there, and the remainder of the frontage there is the remnants of the road that Lester Folds created that looped out on the beach and eventually eroded away. And the board decided not to repair that entire area. We repaired the stairway, but it turns out that that area is also the site where Mr. Foltz has planned to install two dry wells and an infiltration pipe that will collect all of the water that currently accumulates in the cove, move it, and put it in that area immediately behind the riprap. And what coastal engineers have told me is that is the worst sort of thing you want to have behind the riprap. It will saturate the sand, and it will increase the likelihood that the riprap will fail. The reason why the riprap failed last year is the large waves and the high water forced water over the top. Water sat behind the riprap, and when it does that, and what could potentially happen if the ground were saturated to begin with, is that it would basically cause a quicksand condition, and you'd see what happened there, the boulders sunk into the ground. So the board decided to repair the stairs. I approached Mr. Foltz and asked him if he would like to make up the balance to repair the rest of the frontage. I thought that it might be of concern to him since he has this big development proposed there and it is crucial for that piece of the frontage to exist so he can put his drain field there. And he refused to do so, claiming that it was a public access. The position of the board is that it is not our responsibility. It is his property. Looking at the history between 2008 and 2010, the board spent a little over $21,000 repairing the riprap in that area. Again, repairing the entire area, including Mr. Foltz's property.
Are you talking about the end of Susanna?
Yes, right next to your property. And if he is going to develop the area and place additional burdens on that part of the riprap revetment, he has to own up and pay his dues and pay for the riprap. Just one other comment. Looking at the rest of the frontage, in 2005, the Road Association paid a little over $23,000 for repairs elsewhere on the riprap in front of the Pioneer Homes. And that was before our time. I'm not sure what the repairs were. But going forward, to be consistent with what we're doing on the south end of the revetment, it is the board's intention that, because of what we've heard expressed by the membership, that they want access to the beach, we will pay for maintaining the stairs, but outside of that is the responsibility of the individual property owners.
The repairs in front of the Pioneer Homes in 2004 were to protect the utility corridor, the water line, the sewer line, cable line, so it would have washed out if the riprap had not been repaired.
compare Nesco Drive with this here.
Right. If you look elsewhere in Nesco 1, they follow the state guidelines. All riprap repair responsibilities are borne by the property owners. Even in areas where there is public access leading up to the riprap, the maintenance of the riprap, the maintenance of the stairs through the riprap are maintained by the individual property owners. I understand the concern about the infrastructure, but one of the things that it is probably worth keeping in the back of your mind and considering is that maybe moving the infrastructure and maybe at some point, and maybe moving the infrastructure is something that you'll have to consider, because the one thing that coastal geologists and coastal engineers agree on is that shorelines move, structures don't. The work that we had the engineering company do for the Coastal Hazard Committee showed that, just looking at historical trends, if you look at how things were between the 1880s and 2010, by 2050, the shoreline will recede maybe on the order of 50 to 100 feet. If you accelerate that, if you look at how things were between 1967 and 2010, if the erosion rates occur at that rate, the shoreline will be at the base of the riprap by 2025. The fact is that the beach is shrinking, the riprap is going to come under increasing attack, and it wouldn't hurt to start thinking about how to possibly accommodate that.
Bill, I just want to let you know, in all my work with the utilities, as I understand it, all of the utilities except for cable TV already have redundancy. So the utilities that are running along the beachfront there are, if they were to go away, there would still be services throughout the community.
Well, I don't know, but it's something to consider. So just getting back to where I was getting at, that what the board is suggesting is that our riprap maintenance for the future be confined to maintaining the stairways, and beyond that it is the responsibility of the property owners. Herb?
I don't own any of the area that is affected by this, but I guess that the use of the road, does the board feel that it should go as the road is a washout? Because I think in part, in the past, the road association helped to repair that riprap, keep the road open for everybody.
Right. But there are two things there that the situation potentially in the future is where it may become increasingly expensive to maintain the road, and at some point, and I don't know when that might be, but the consideration might be that it is no longer economically feasible. The second thing is that not everybody is in favor of riprap, and you have to recognize that fixing the position of the shoreline with the riprap ultimately results as a result of the increasing rise in water, that the beach shrinks. So at some point in time, you're going to be left without a beach and with only riprap along the shoreline. So those are just things to consider looking into the future. So is there any recommendation on the policy toward riprap?
On the what?
The policy of maintaining the stairways? Well, what the board is suggesting is that the road association will pay for maintaining the stairways, but not the rest of the riprap.
The rest of the riprap on the public areas, which are?
The rest of the privately owned riprap.
So that abandons about potentially 15 homes on Lower Nesco Drive, Surf, and T-Sand. Because when the road goes out in front of the Pioneer Homes from lack of maintenance of the road, all those properties are mostly inaccessible.
And again, The regulations regarding riprap is that riprap is the responsibility of the property owners. That is the way that it is throughout Nesquen. That is the way it is throughout the state. It's who owns the property, and the person who owns the property is Bob Fultz.
I'm sorry, the answer was?
The person who owns the property there is Bob Fultz.
The street?
Yes.
Okay.
I believe that the riprap south of CSAN was repaired by the homeowner.
Yes, right.
Right. He repaired it. He had great damage because of the high tide, and he repaired it himself this year.
You did?
No, we did not.
No,
yes.
South of CSAN, not north.
I received phone calls from Dan Kaufman saying that your wife had contracted to have that area of the riprap repaired.
Well,
okay. Candy. Yes.
I consider that we own the riprap. You all know this.
Right. No, that.
And of course, that's the baseline debt.
Okay. So, if there aren't any other issues regarding the riprap, the final thing is that we do have this problem with the culvert. That is the first culvert south of the intersection of South Beach Road and Nesco. And if you look at the lay of the land there, if that culvert plugs up, the first area to flood is Nesco Drive. South Beach Road is actually a little higher. December 2014, the first week of December, there was heavy rainfall. And when I came up to that intersection, there was over a foot of water rushing through there. I was surprised that the road was still there when it went down. The problem with the culvert is that, for one, it's too small. It's only 3 feet diameter, and it has collapsed and needs to be replaced. And the problem with replacing it is that a sewer line runs over the top of it, and they say that you can't raise the sewer line. So what we need to do is to find some way to accommodate that. We went to the Mistuck and Nesquen and Sand Lake Watershed Council, mostly just to find out if they had any ideas on how it could be taken care of. And they took that as a request for money, and the new coordinator said that they didn't have any money to provide us. So where we currently are is that we have had an engineer come out to see what might be done.
But
there are box culverts that you could possibly use. What was recommended in 2010 was to build a bridge. Any of those things are going to be more expensive than a simple culvert. The last culvert that we installed was partly paid for by the Watershed Council, and I believe was on the order of $10,000. So that is going to be a significant expense. It is something that needs to be done. And currently, we don't have an idea how to accommodate that. But that is something that is on the table. Along with that, another item is paving South Beach Road from the Proposal Rock Loop up to the base of the hill. The stretch between the end of the Proposal Rock Loop and Nesco Drive gets so much traffic that we can't keep gravel on it. And so that would be more easily maintained if it was paved. We might try grading this year to see if we can improve that, but ultimately there's enough traffic that a gravel road doesn't work. From Nesco Drive to the base of the hill, the road is in poor condition, and that would probably need to be replaced. That we do have a number for. It's somewhere in the range of somewhere around $55,000, and a large enough project that it would take a couple years to raise money for. But before anything can be done there, we need to figure out what to do about the culvert. So,
no, are you through with the culvert thing?
I'm through with everything.
Okay. So, a minute ago, were you asking for an expression of opinion or expression of a sentiment?
I wanted a confirmation
from the audience about the riprap.
I wanted a confirmation of the board's decision or some other suggested decision through maintaining the riprap.
I move that we only maintain the riprap where the stairs are.
Is there a second? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay.
Aye. Opposed? No.
No.
Thank you. All opposed?
Let's show of hands on this.
Okay.
No.
It has to be a vote where only each household gets a single vote.
If you want, do you want a roll call vote on this? Okay. Well,
you know, folks, it all comes back to money. It all comes back to money.
This is how the current situation is correct.
What?
The road association maintains the stairwell.
Right. Previously, it wasn't that way, though.
Well, I'm not.
There have been times.
I'm not 100.
The infrastructure of the whole community is aging and needs more work. The bridge, for example, we 10 years ago. Well, we bought our property 25 years ago. Hey, the bridge was fine. Nobody even thought about the bridge. Now we're thinking about the bridge to the tune of $80,000 or whatever that number was.
But that
doesn't even include the others, such as the culvert he's talking about. One culvert, when I was the road commissar about 10 years ago, one culvert, $15,000. It all comes back to money. We don't have the money.
Well, let me just address your question specifically. What I was looking for is maybe it's clear what our policy will be, and I'll take it that there were yes votes and there were no votes, and I think the yes votes were probably larger. Thank you.
What about just fixing one set of stairs if we're so short of money?
I think we can take care of all the stairs. And one of the things, though, we need to recognize is that the stairs through the riprap are not going to be as good as the stairs in your house. And so you have to be ready that you're crawling over rocks. I'm amazed that the contractors can make stairs the way they do. There are some things that we might try to do. Currently, the railing on the south access is not connected. I think we need to come up with something that's a little more accommodating than a rigid pipe the entire length. So maybe in the future, for the lowermost section, having a heavy chain, a heavy rope, or a sliding bar, something that will take into account the fact that the rocks are moving. Ken?
You might look at something that would be temporary for the summer and remove in the winter there on that lower section where, last year it was up
right
10 feet higher.
We're open to any suggestions. That is the other thing that I was amazed, repairing that less than 10-foot section. The first quote that we got was $800. We eventually found somebody who's suggesting maybe $400, but he's not going to be able to get to the job for another month or two. Okay. Any other items that people want to bring up? Yes.
I would just like to table paving the road and take care of the culvert as the first priority.
That is definitely it. You can't pave the road with a substandard culvert.
I'd like to make it be known that
right.
That must be done. And most cable that I'm able to pave it doesn't need to be done.
Right. David, you?
I would like to suggest that you wait on the bridge repairs until if the cove area is in the development process, chances are the bridge won't pass the scrutiny of the fire marshal or fire.
The bridge has to be repaired this summer. Okay. The Army Corps of Engineers permit is going to be in an extension phase next summer. It will run out in March of 2018, and the situation at the bridge is critical enough that we don't want to jeopardize losing the whole structure. Currently, what's happening is the road foundation on the Highway 101 side is being undercut, and if you notice as you go over the bridge, there's a little bump on that side. That is a result of the road sinking, and that needs to be stopped. Yes?
Chief Campbell, just a summary of the bridge repair, so longer, wider, fixing the banks?
No. The bridge repair is just fixing the banks. It's installing riprap along the banks.
You won't even see it. I mean, it'll look the same.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the bridge stays the same.
Right.
Okay.
Ellen?
Who makes a decision on where these speed bumps are placed and the design of them? Because most of them are just square to the road, but the one up near the Henningsen house is diagonal like this, so that it really rocks your car.
The paving contractor did it that way so the water would drain off the road.
Why didn't you just put a little space in between them?
It directs the water to the edge, is what they're trying to do.
What I'm trying to say is if you have a bad back, it's really hard.
Slow down to 40 miles an hour.
No. Yeah, really?
Okay. Are there. Jack, you know.
A couple of applications we gave you is your group, and Trudeau takes the lead on the bridge project. We kind of take the lead on the gate. There's a couple of things that have come up that I thought might be on the agenda. There's been suggestions by members of your association and ours to change the gate code twice a year. And what we're proposing for you to consider, and we're not saying this is set in stone, is twice a year. One would be pre the 4th of July, and one would be post Labor Day. Good. Now, the problem is communicating that to our constituents, so that's a concern that needs to be addressed. We would like to have you guys consider that as well.
Right. And I think what would be easiest for us is that we have two membership-wide mailings, one in April and one in July, or one in August. If it could be accommodated that way, we can do it. Otherwise, if you want, just we can also, if it's important to have it spaced right, we could do a mailing just for that purpose. Or we could also communicate by email if people are agreeable.
And the second thing is, as you're well aware, the current gate is quite old now. The operating system is under question. Those are being phased out. Metro, who does all the repair, has stopped the common parts that typically go out. But that's going to dry up sometime. The new controller, that's the punch pad, not the actual gate operator, will have to be replaced sometime in the near future because parts will not be available. So I want you to be thinking about the future expense of a new controller. And I've asked Metro to give us an estimate. How that would dovetail with the current operating system versus. So we'll be coming back to you guys in the next year or two on that control. Right now, the typical parts, they have no gates up and down, so they have the normal parts to replace, but that's going to drive us.
Okay. Thank you for bringing that up. And I was very impressed that you have new codes predicted out years into the future. But
I'm a nervous guy.
Yeah. That's very thorough. Any other comments? So stay tuned. We're going to change the code more frequently. We'll get that information out to you one way or another. Okay, is there a call for adjournment? Ken, second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Thank you very much for attending.
Thank you.